Welcome to the Global Emergency Medicine Literature Review podcast series. The GEMLR highlights and disseminates high-quality emergency medicine research from around the world, focusing on EM development, disaster and humanitarian response, and emergency care in low-resource settings. We're going to be bringing to you bite-sized portions of international academic goodness from acute care facilities around the globe. Today, I'm going to be joined by...
Hello, everyone. My name is Alex Jensen. I'm an emergency medicine resident at Johns Hopkins, and I'm also a reviewer for the GEMLR.
Hi, everybody. My name is Sacha Munat. I'm also an emergency medicine resident at Johns Hopkins, and will be providing sound engineering support for the podcast.
And I'll be your host. I'm Pugthi Hansodi. I'm faculty at Johns Hopkins University, and I'm also an editor for the GEMLR. So today, we're going to talk about a study by Zhao et al. That was published in The Lancet 2014, and this is a prospective screening study to determine the clinical usefulness of combining clinical examination with pulse oximetry testing of newborns to detect asymptomatic congenital heart disease. The reviewer for the GEMLR was Dr. Tyson Weltzel from South Africa, and I have Alex here with me today who's going to tell us a little bit about the study.
Yeah, so this was a study that is part of a larger debate about the use of pulse oximetry for detecting asymptomatic congenital heart disease amongst well-appearing newborns in middle-income countries where there is the potential for further treatment or further diagnosis if they're detected to have a low pulse oximetry reading. What they did was it was a prospective multi-center study. They enrolled over 130,000 deliveries.
Wait, 130,000?
Yep, 18 different hospitals in China in near Shanghai, and all consecutive deliveries were enrolled in this.
Well, I see why it was published in The Lancet then.
So what they did was they looked to see if this plus a clinical evaluation could detect this. Clinical evaluation looking for other congenital anomalies, looking for heart murmurs and the like. And what they did was, if they were positive, they then went on for an echo and further clinical evaluation. Now, the asymptomatic newborns were screened between 6 and 72 hours after birth with an average time, a median time of about 43 hours after birth. And 3,000, around 3,500 of that, again, 120,000 asymptomatic newborns had screened positive. And then eventually this yielded a sensitivity rate of 90% and a specificity of 97% for a congenital heart disease, showing that if you had the negative predictive value of pulse oximetry for these newborns is 99.97%, and a likelihood ratio, if you had a pulse oximetry that was abnormal, of 32.9 for having a congenital heart malformation.
So just hold on for a second. That's really high sensitivity and specificity. So they do a confirmatory echocardiogram in every single patient that was enrolled to make sure that they didn't have a congenital heart disease?
So no, their negative, the way that they detected false negatives was that they had a follow-up with, they stated that they had follow-up with family and some other way. So they didn't do the echoes if the child was asymptomatic. And the only way that they determined, well, that child must not have a congenital, was they sent them out and never heard back, so they assumed they didn't have a congenital heart malformation.
So I think that's a major flaw in the study design. I mean, I would anticipate with 120,000 patients that you're sending home saying your screening exam's normal. They do mention that they do a 6-week baby check and a telephone follow-up at 1 year, but I don't see anywhere in the paper where it's written what their success for follow-up was and what their loss to follow-up rate was. So assuming that the child has nothing wrong if they don't hear back, is not really a good gold standard.
And keeping in mind also that this is very uncommon, these congenital heart malformations, so that even though we're talking about these enormously large numbers, the differences for critically ill congenital heart malformations, they say they're 93% of asymptomatic critical congenital heart disease were detected. So that 7% was that false negative. That's only 10 children. That's 136 of 146. So there might be 15 or 20 or 30, but a lot of them were lost to follow-up. Those are the 10 false negatives who they found in these telephone screens. So that this really could affect it, even though the numbers are so big. The actual number of critical congenital heart disease amongst this large population is actually quite small.
Or the child could have died from other causes, such as sepsis or hypoxia, that was presumed to be due to another secondary cause, but never diagnosed with a congenital heart disease because they lived in a rural province and didn't have access to an echocardiogram. So I feel like the sensitivity and specificity numbers are probably a little bit inflated. If you count, they don't have a rigorous method they didn't screen all the patients, that these are assumed false, negatives or assumed negatives, really. The other thing that I thought was quite interesting is looking at their enrollment, they actually transferred out of the 130,000 deliveries, 2,500 patients approximately got transferred to a superior hospital out of the asymptomatic newborns. So I wonder, like, those patients were excluded from the study, but they most likely had something wrong with them in their first couple of hours of life, requiring an emergent transfer.
They probably did, and those kinds of patients could be transferred in a situation like this, but what if they were in a situation where they couldn't have been transferred? Those patients would be useful for the external validity of this study to another environment where that transfer wouldn't have been possible, because those are, imagining I'm in a setting where I don't have the capacity to transfer them somewhere else, and I need to manage that. How does that affect the sensitivity and the specificity of this tool in that situation? I'll never know.
And I'll say this for the listeners. I don't know if we can answer this question, but what has this got to do with emergency medicine?
So I think that there are a couple limited situations where this might be applicable. I think the fact that these children were assessed for at a median time age of 43 hours, which is, we're talking 2 days after birth. I don't know of any situation in which an emergency department provider is taking care of a child 2 days after their birth, unless they're presenting with some secondary complaint and coming back to the emergency department, in which case I'm going to check the pulse ox anyway.
And they're not the asymptomatic patients that are enrolled in the study.
Right, exactly. So I think this is very important and practical for nurseries and for obstetricians to think about, or even for pediatricians to think about for screening tests. But I wonder about the usefulness in an emergency setting, because those children will have some specific complaint when they come back.
The reviewer actually makes an extremely sound ethical argument here as well. He makes an argument about how if echocardiography is not freely available and neither is access to a cardiothoracic surgeon or interventional radiology, then doing this screening, which, you know, really is probably not as specific as reported, puts you in an ethical quandary. So you're diagnosing the child as potentially having something wrong without the ability to confirm the congenital heart disease or treat the congenital heart condition if it is diagnosed. Why are we screening in the first place?
And keeping in mind also that the positive predictive value is still only 7.9% in this asymptomatic newborn. So I'm imagining I'm in a rural setting. Going to the nearest echo would cost a family 2 months' salary, and it's only a 7.9% positive predictive value. So there's an 8% chance this child actually has a critical congenital heart malformation, and I'm asking a family to spend 2 months' salary for an 8% chance that this might be clinically relevant.
Yeah, the false positives, so the true positives recorded were ranging, you know, between 62 to 14 patients. The false positives were in the, you know, hundreds and thousands. So really you're committing a lot of people to doing extra testing with a relatively low yield.
Right, and that's easy to do if you are in a middle or high income country where echoes are freely available, but it's a lot more difficult in a situation where it would require a lot of resources to get that confirmatory study.
Yeah. So, I mean, what I take away from the study is, in summary, large study published in The Lancet, however, limited applicability to an emergency practitioner in the international setting, in a low resource international setting. My take home, however, is that pulse oximetry is useful. as not unuseful? Would I invest in a pulse oximeter in a pediatric triage area? Yes. If the pulse oximetry was low, less than 90%, in a low-resource primary healthcare clinic, that patient should probably be transferred to an area where a pediatrician is available to do further evaluation. That's not what this study shows. That's not what the study says. That's just my take on pulse oximetry. Would you like to add anything else?
No, I think that you make a good point, and particularly for an emergency provider, this isn't immediately after birth, where there's a lot of other ways of triaging severe illness. This is a screening tool prior to discharge, and that's not an emergency care provider's responsibility, usually in the vast majority of situations.
But just in case, if you're on your knees and you happen to deliver a baby, do a pulse oximetry, and if it's positive, get a pediatrician to do the examination. So this is Bhakti, Alex, and Sachin. We're signing off for today. If you would like to look at the review and the full article, please visit our website, www.gemlr.org. Or you can look at the manuscript at Academic Emergency Medicine. Have a great day.